I would like to call the May 4th meeting of the Energy and Environment Committee to order. And Fawn has provided a flag, so please stand and pledge allegiance to the flag. Pledge allegiance
of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation under God, indivisible, liberty, justice for all. Thank you. Somehow it's more important than ever to ensure that sense of unity. And with that, I would like to ask the committee if they've had a chance to review the minutes. I see some nods. So I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the, I think it's the May 13th. Is that right?
I'll make the motion. I'll second that.
Okay. Made and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved, and I think, let's see, to stay in order, we would go right to the resolutions. I would like to check with Tim Rose and be sure that, you know, sometimes we move the agency report up to, quote, get it out of the way. It's always a value, but I just want to ask if Tim is okay with going directly to the resolution, or would you prefer to go now? I'll give you that option.
I'll leave that totally up to you, Amanda. Either way is fine with me. You as the chair, that's totally up to you. But thank
you. Okay. Before I decide, I would like to ask. It's my understanding on resolution number 94, and this is before I'm even asking for a motion. I just want to know how to order the agenda. Legislator Petit, had you? Oh, okay. I do see that Michelle Hook is here. Okay. So I think that what we'll do is to just go right ahead and ask for a motion to discuss resolution number 94. And will the person who makes that motion, if you have it right in front of you, read the title of the motion, then I'll ask for a second for the purpose of discussion. Do I hear a motion from a committee person to discuss resolution number 94?
I'll make a motion to discuss resolution 94.
Would you read it, please, if you have it in front of you?
I do not have it in front of me.
Okay.
It is opposing the new power plant facility at the former Dance Hammer Energy site in Newburgh, Orange County, New York.
I hear a second.
I'll second that motion.
Okay, thank you. At this point, Legislator Petit had invited Michelle Hook from Dance Hammer to make a few comments, and we've also invited Haley Carlock from Scenic Hudson. So do the committee members have questions before we hear from each of our guests, or shall we just hear their comments and then have our discussion? Legislator Hefner. Unmute, please.
Yeah, so I just wanted to also, and I think it's a great opportunity, you know, to have conversations right now while we do have a little bit more time. But it is, you know, and I've spoken with Legislator Bartels about this, it is our intention to continue like we did last month, while we went through a month of virtual legislating through committee meetings and session, as part of a mutual agreement with our colleagues in the minority caucus, as they have also done, to put a hold on all memorializing resolutions. in order to allow us to focus on the county business we must get done in addressing the current crisis. So it has been a mutual agreement that we have that we are not proceeding with memorializing resolutions. A big reason for that too is because of the limited public input that we're allowed to do, we're able to do. So far, the only public input we can do is through a call-in number, through audio, which has also been a decision, part of the decision with Minority Leader Ron. So I just wanted to preface that. You know, it is, again, our attention, and in speaking with Legislative Bartels, as well as with all memorializing resolutions from both sides of the aisle and from both caucuses, to keep them postponed while we operate virtually. So thank you.
Okay. Legislator Bartels, did you want to please go ahead?
Thanks. I just wanted to add on to what Legislator Heppner just said, and that's, and this we can discuss, if the committee wants to move it out of committee, it would be our intention, Legislator Heppner and my, to do on the floor to postpone it next month. So it can either be postponed in committee, or if it's moved to the floor, we would postpone it on the floor as the other memorializing resolutions have been postponed in the hopes that we're at a point where we can more easily facilitate public input. So we can talk about that after the comment, however this committee wants to proceed.
I think that's fine. I do want to say that, and I say this whenever the idea of reopening is brought up, I am very concerned about what happened in 1918, and I would rather see New York State and Ulster County stay closed longer to be sure that we don't open prematurely and have a second wave that is more devastating. If that becomes the case, where this is not a month or two more, then I think we should revisit the idea of considering memorializing resolutions that are time sensitive. I don't think there's any concern with that right at the moment with this resolution, but this could go on for 6 months. In our next resolution, we are postponing implementation for a full 6 months for something that was meant to be implemented in July. We're postponing it till January. That, I think, is a safe time period for ensuring that we get through this pandemic. Nobody knows that. Nobody has the crystal ball. But I do want to suggest to Legislator Heppner that if this does take 3 or 4 months before we can meet in person, then I do think that agreement should be reconsidered. But at this point, given that, you know, there isn't urgency tonight, and the committee can decide which of the two options that Legislator Bartels outlined we would like to go with, I would like to invite Michelle Hook from Dance Gemmer to say a few words. And Michelle, I think I'd like to limit it to 5 minutes given the agenda, and we'll do the same with Ms. Carlock.
Sure, absolutely. And I apologize. This all sort of came about around 4:30 or so today. So I scrambled to put a few comments together. I do have some PowerPoint slides that I'm happy to share my screen if you'd like to see them. Otherwise, I can just talk a little bit about some of the things I've been hearing in Ulster County and speak to some of the concerns that you have, just for the sake of time. So why don't you tell me how you'd like me to proceed?
If you're good at screen sharing, we're all learning. You're welcome to do that, and the same would be true for Haley Carla.
Okay. All right, it looks like the host has disabled screen sharing by attendees, so it doesn't look like I'm going to be able to share my screen. Unless there's a way to enable it from your end, but...
Jay should be able to do that. Yes, thumbs up. Try again.
Can you see my screen now?
I think you might need to do one more click. It says you've started screen sharing, but in my experience, there's one more button to push when that message comes up.
It's not showing me another button.
I don't think
it's saying my screen is shared. Oh, it's been paused. Why has it been paused? Let's try again.
Recording red light up in the corner, what I see.
Yeah, from my end, it looks as if I'm sharing it. I can try to stop the share and start over quickly.
We won't start your time until...
Thank you for that. Any luck?
No. Michelle, I was going to suggest you email them to Fontantillo or to Victoria Fabella, and they can send them to us after the fact.
That's fine as well. My apologies. Again, from my end, it's showing me that I'm sharing that. So I'll give it one more shot. If this doesn't work, then... If you're not seeing it, then I will move on.
Can you reverse your screenshot so we can see your tablet?
I cannot on this computer.
Well, we're all learning at this late stage in some of our lives. For some of you, this will be second nature, but for some of it's teaching, pardon my saying so, but teaching old dogs new tricks.
Why don't you just go ahead and share with us what you were going to share on your PowerPoint.
Sure.
Okay.
Did that work?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your patience. I think it is important to note that there are a couple things that seem to be the biggest concerns that I'm hearing in your community. So I want to speak to those first. I'm hearing that there is no need for this facility, that natural gas is being phased out because of CLCPA. I'm also hearing that this plant's going to cause a lot of harm and pollution to the area community. I'd like to address those two things first and quickly. this facility, whether new or old, is going to continue to operate, as will the other very old power plants in the region of the Hudson Valley. They're all needed. When Indian Point goes down, they'll be needed even more. Yes, Cricket Valley has come online. Yes, CPV is now online as well, but there's still a deficit for power in that region. CLCPA has created targets, and they're wonderful targets. But unfortunately, those targets can't be met just because they've been set. As a matter of fact, the New York ISO has just done a grid study, and they're still working to figure out the analysis of whether or not we can even meet those targets. And the draft study was just published last week, so this information is extremely timely. And they'll be putting it out in full form here probably in the next 6 months or so. They've got another component, an economic component to the study that they need to do. But the thing that they looked at first and foremost is, can these targets even be met? Can they be met? And can we still have reliable power as we try to go towards those targets set forth? And what they found is that we're going to need significant amounts of flexibility on call, meaning energy that you can turn on at a moment's notice, resources like natural gas power plants that can come on quickly as needed. The analysis showed that there's a significant imbalance between the demand we have in New York State and the power generation that would be available if you take into account all of the targets that are set within CLCPA. In the winter, they say that half of the hours in the winter would not have enough power to generate people's needs. Even if you added 10 times the amount of wind in the state of New York, you would not have enough power half of the time. In the summertime, they said almost every single hour of the day, you would not have enough power. The word deficit in the draft report is talked about throughout. The need to increase intermittent renewable power alone is not going to meet the demands. On-call power needs to be available. All right, so what does that mean? We may not be the main power source that we rely on in 20 years, but we will certainly be needed as backup power. And the question you need to answer is, do you want that backup power to come from an extremely old, inefficient, and dirty facility, or would you prefer that backup power come from something cleaner, more efficient, that uses less than half the natural gas of the existing facility? I wish I could show it to you, but this facility is going to produce 95% less nitrogen oxide, 88% less carbon dioxide. VOCs, particulate matter, all go down by more than 70% across the board. Carbon dioxide reductions are even more than that. The thing that people need to keep in mind is that this facility, not only as a one-to-one, is an improvement from old Danscammer to new Danscammer, but it's also offsetting Roaston, Bowline, other old facilities in this region. One thing people don't realize is we still rely on a lot of out-of-state coal power to provide power to the lower Hudson Valley. Yes, we've shut down all the coal plants in New York, but we still import a lot of coal from other grids. And guess what? We'll still need that if you don't let us offset that with a new facility. During this COVID, we talk about sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, and how it's contributing to COVID. If you want to see reductions across the board in those, you need to have efficient and cleaner natural gas facilities to get us there. So maybe it only runs for 15 or 20 years, but it's 15 or 20 years of cleaner power than you would have otherwise. And in 2040, if the grid is ready to approach things from a renewable and a battery power perspective, we'll be in a position to shut down. Something we haven't shared with people because it's still been too much in the works is that our facility, the turbine that we've chosen from Mitsubishi, has the ability to run on zero carbon hydrogen power, which could be created by renewables. You use renewable power, you mix it with water through an electrolyzer, and then our facility could potentially run on hydrogen. So when that technology is available to transport that hydrogen and store that hydrogen, we could then in 2040 transition to be a part of that zero carbon mix as we move forward. If you're familiar with the legislature, there was a bill from CUSIC that actually addressed this issue and the creation of storage for hydrogen facilities. It's the newest thing the state is looking at as a contributor because renewable power alone, because it is so intermittent, the wind and solar, isn't enough to address our power needs. So they are looking at incorporating other things like battery power, which right now only gives you about 4 hours of power. So you can add things like hydrogen power, which can help fill in those gaps so you wouldn't need the natural gas. But in the interim, we can provide you with a more efficient natural gas facility, and then phase two could be to transition to hydrogen so that we can fill in the gaps with hydrogen power. So you're asking us to continue to run a 1950s, 1960s Buick when we could be running a Prius to get us through to the next phase. I don't know if there are questions specifically. I have numbers. I'm happy to send them to you after this so that you can see how significant the reductions are across the region with the new facility versus the old facility. I can tell you that it's so significant that it's like replacing 50,000 vehicles on the road today with electric vehicles. That's how much of a carbon reduction it is by just replacing our facility, our old one, with a new one. I certainly don't think I have to tell you about the jobs and the tax dollars that this plant contributes to the region. I was a little taken aback. I apologize when I was told to come on the call. I thought only Haley Carlock from Scenic Hudson was going to be on, and I see that there are a number of other people from opposition groups to our project on the phone as well. We have quite a few supporters that I would have been happy to get on the phone as well. The Marlboro Town, the Marlboro School District, the unions, and a lot of other local organizations throughout Orange County that are supportive of this project and see the value in it for the region, not just because of the 450 jobs and the significant tax dollars that we provide, but we give back a significant amount to the community as well. And I would be remiss if I didn't say this. I respect very much what Haley does. She's going to tell you the facility is not needed. She's going to point to a report from 2017 before the CLCPA targets were put in place and tell you that this facility is not necessary. Her job, as it is the job of Food and Water Watch and the others on the phone, is to tell you that fossil plants aren't needed. That's the goal of their facility. That's the goal of their organizations. But what's not their job is to maintain a reliable grid, keep your lights on, keep your heat running. That's not the goal of those organizations. Their goal is to fundraise off of shutting down fossil fuel facilities, whether they're needed or not. There's also a huge cost savings associated with our facility. $53 million across the state and $11 million in the Hudson Valley alone on an annual basis. Why? Because we're using 50% less natural gas, and that cost is passed on to the customer typically. We don't use fracked gas, quote unquote. If you're a Central Hudson customer, we're a customer of Central Hudson too. We get our natural gas from the same place that you get your natural gas from. We don't decide where it comes from. Central Hudson has contracts out with various producers, brings in the natural gas, and we purchase it from them, and we make the electricity that comes into your home so that you can turn your lights on. That's pretty much it. I'm available to answer questions if you have specific questions.
There was a specific question in the chat box, but at this point, you know, there are a lot of things I could say, and I think I'd rather turn this over to Haley Carlock and then to the committee to ask questions. Haley, do you have some things that you would like to share with us?
Sure, yeah, thank you, Manna and everyone. I really appreciate having the opportunity to speak here. Much like Michelle, I found out about this only shortly beforehand, so I don't have, you know, a well-polished PowerPoint to share. I do have a couple of slides and images I'd like to try to share. I'm going to try this very quickly. If it does not work right away, we can simply move on and just speak, and I can share them afterwards. Just to share my screen, we shall see how this goes. Okay, we'll see if this works. All right. Can you guys see my screen? Okay.
It's little, though.
So,
oh, never mind. We can make it bigger. Okay.
Okay. Is it working okay? Is it worth
yeah, thank that? You.
I am going to address, as Michelle alluded to really quickly, sort of the two primary things I think, you know, people are interested in knowing more about and want to hear about, which are the need for the plant and also the potential for emissions increases and air pollution. I'm going to take them in a different order. Really quickly, when it comes to looking at the proposed dance camera facility and the emissions that it could produce, this is a table that I'm sharing right now, which is directly taken from Dance Camera Energy's Article 10 application to the siting board. The only thing that's not copied directly is the highlighted yellow parts, which I just did for the ease of sort of drawing your eye to what I'm going to discuss. Otherwise, this is verbatim from their application. And this shows here, it's a comparison that they're required to do by the Clean Air Act, but it shows a comparison between the actual emissions on average on an annual basis from the current existing facility over a two-year period. And you see they chose to do 2014 to 2016, so pretty recent. It had to be within the past 5 years. And the projected potential emissions from the new plant if it would run as a baseline facility. And this is something that they're required to do by statute. And you can see here that for almost all the pollutants, there's one exception, there is a very significant increase in potential emissions from what the old plant actually produces and from what the new plant has the potential to produce. And the reason for that is because the new plant is very likely to run much, much more often than the old plant. Ms. Hook mentioned that the new plant would reduce pollutants and emissions, but that's on a per hour basis. Hour to hour, the new facility is going to be newer. It's going to be more efficient when it burns fuel. However, it's going to run much more often. And again, this is an analysis that DEC requires through the Clean Air Act. And based on these significant emissions increases, Dance Camera is required to do an additional emissions protocols because of this. So, I mean, you can see there in plain sight that the emissions of greenhouse gases are going to increase about 1,000%. The emissions of particulate matter are going, and VOCs are going to increase around the order of 2,500. And that is, this is taken directly from Dance Camera's application. So I do just want to make sure it's abundantly clear that air emissions are going to increase as a result of the new plant taking the place of the old one, because it's going to run much more often. And to that, I will just show you these bar charts, which are, you know, simply a visualization of the previous tables. Directly, the data is taken directly from Dance Camera, but it just shows you just how much more those emissions could increase with the new plant. Another thing that Ms. Hook mentioned, and that you'll hear a lot from the folks from Dance Camera Energy, is that the new plant will offset older, dirtier sources, including the existing plant, including rose tin and others. And based on that, it will make the air as a whole cleaner. Now, when Dance Camera speaks about looking at things on a regional basis, when I ask people what they think that means, they think it means maybe the Hudson Valley, maybe a tri-county area, it's going to positively impact the air quality there. But when Dance Camera speaks about improving the air quality on a regional basis, they took into account the entire state of New York, all of the New England states, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and the province of Ontario in Canada. And our expert we've hired, Synapse Energy Economics, who's just begun their analysis, we don't have any results from them yet, believes that on its face, that's an entirely inappropriate geographical region to be looking at when you're looking at emissions. It sort of artificially makes the numbers look better than they otherwise would. And I think it's important to note that if you look at the entire state of New York, but just the state, even based on Dance Camera's own modeling, and again, this is in their Article 10 application, greenhouse gases are projected to increase over 300,000 tons per year with the new plant online versus everything else the same, but the old plant staying online. And that is based on their own modeling. So it's a bit disingenuous to say that our air quality is going to improve as a result of this new plant. It's just not going to happen. And I'll just speak really briefly to the need question and the goals set forth in the CLCPA certainly are ambitious, and it's absolutely true that we're nowhere near reaching them right now, and that it is going to take some time to ramp up, but there are several dozen large grid-scale solar projects and wind projects currently in the Article 10 queue. As most, if not all of you probably know, there has been a new Article 23 passed that creates a new renewable energy office under the Department of State that proposes an entirely new way to site renewable energy in the state of New York. And the entire purpose of it is to accelerate dramatically the approval process for these large-scale facilities. You're going to see a total sea change in the next 5 to 10 years in the energy makeup in the state of New York. Right now, we don't have enough. 5, 10 years from now, we absolutely should have enough. And in addition to that, there are several very significant transmission projects that are in the Article 7 state siting process that will bring between 1,800 and 2,500 megawatts of energy that is currently bottlenecked in the less populated regions in the northern and western part of the state, and it will relieve that bottleneck and allow that energy, which is primarily renewable, to come downstate and further, you know, relieve any pressure on the capacity here in the lower Hudson Valley. So we believe there's absolutely, you know, no need for this plan. It's certainly not needed to keep the lights on. And that by the time these older, dirtier plants are retiring, we will have sufficient wind, solar, storage, increased energy efficiency, and those transmission constraints will be relieved. And the New York State Independent System Operator, a recent study released having to do with the retirement of Indian Point, all show that as long as we continue on the track we're going with renewable energy in New York, we will be able to supplant that with cleaner, greener energy, and we don't need to rely on new gas plants and fossil fuel infrastructure. I'll leave it at that because I think I went over my time.
Haley, if you would unshare your screen. Very good. So at this point, I see Legislator Warro has her hand up. Go ahead.
Man, I just had a question. Were we making it open to the public for the personal comments on the screen? The chat?
Jane should answer that because I'm not managing that.
No, but it's up to you to tell her what's allowed. And I was under the understanding that the chat was not available to people coming, you know, viewing, other than committee members. So I think you would have to clarify that to her.
I would ask that if it's a private comment, that you send it privately. But
Jay can turn off the chat except for the people that you approve.
This was my thought, and I'm open to what the committee wants to do, but since we weren't going to recognize all of the people that have called in, that we would let them ask questions in the chat, and we're all just figuring this out as we go along, and different committees have done it differently. We could do it the other way around. We could make the chat private to the committee members, and then take a few public questions or comments.
I just think it's distracting that when we're listening to somebody speak, people are chatting back and forth, you know, posting chats.
Okay, I want to keep the meetings transparent, but if we make the chat available only to committee members, then it'll take, the meeting will be a little longer, I think, because instead of just reading the comments in the chat, you know,
I don't know. I misunderstood. I thought in the beginning you said that to send to Vicki or Fawn their comments.
My understanding originally, but I think I want to just point out to the staff that collectively, we're going to need to get clear guidelines. We're all, as I said, figuring this out as we go along. In a committee meeting, we would typically recognize people if they had a comment, we would limit the time. But in a committee meeting, you know, we have often recognized members of the public who want to add, especially when there's been a presentation.
And I, don't get me wrong, I don't have a problem with that. I just have a problem with them doing it while other things are going on.
So you're finding that distracting. Yeah. All right. Well, for now, to honor that, I'm going to ask that Jane, if she can, make the chat just for the committee. No. Okay. So...
Right now, Manna, I have that all chats go to the host. That's me. So if they want them to be directed to someone in particular, they should indicate so, and I will funnel it for you. So if it's a question for your speaker, I will send it to you or the speaker. And if it's just a comment, which is what it appears to be, some of these are just comments, then I can save the chat and provide them to everyone after the meeting. But that's the best this chat will allow me to do. The restrictions are very limited. No one can chat. Everyone can chat only publicly, or they can chat with the host only, and that's the option that I chose just so that you all aren't distracted, but you can still get the information if you need it.
Okay, I do think in a committee meeting, people would not be chatting. They would be asked to step outside if they want to have a conversation. They would be listening as we were listening. So... I am finding it a little distracting too. So if that works for everyone, Jay will monitor the chats and I'd like at this point to, set aside the next 10 minutes, but not longer than that. We have other items on the agenda, for, questions from committee members and also other legislators, the two resolution sponsors are part of this conversation. And I would ask that members of the public please do send in their comments or questions. And it's the best way to do that is to VFAB at townv.ulster.ny.us. So I'm looking for questions or comments from committee members or resolution sponsors. Yes, Legislator Criswell.
So I just had one comment about if we are indeed going to postpone this till next month or whenever we're going to postpone it, I feel like we're going to go through this exact same process again. So I'm just wondering if there's a kind of a more efficient way to have people have their voices heard, but not have to have us do this exact same thing in a month and then a month again or whenever the process happens. So, you know what, I'm just trying to figure out efficiency for this.
Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. Yes, I think undoubtedly, and that's part of the reason that we're willing to postpone, because we expect a very robust public input from all sides of the argument. But in the meantime, this is an opportunity to ask questions, which we can't normally do at public comment. So here in committee, you know, if you have any questions for either of the people who have presented today, it's a good opportunity for you to ask. And even if there aren't ready answers, we have the time to get the answers back. And to that end, I know Michelle, Ms. Hook, you mentioned that you had numbers that you were going to provide us. Can we don't right now, but after the meeting, can you provide those numbers to the clerks?
I absolutely can, and I'm happy to seek some clarification on what Haley shared with you as well. If you look at our Article 10 filing, there are a million charts like the one that she showed you, so I'm not familiar with the one that she shared with you, and I didn't have the opportunity or the amount of time to get a technical person on this call for this evening. to point directly to what Haley was speaking to, but I'm happy to do that and then get some answers on the chart that she shared, because I am not familiar with that one.
And to that end, when you spoke about the numbers depending on which line, some of what Haley brought up as well, going down, what assumption were you using in terms of the amount of time that the plant would be in operation?
70% of the time. 70%. That's what we were told by the New York ISO it would be. I would also like to point out that all of the assumptions in the data that we ran for our Article 10 filing were what the PSC and the DEC decided we needed to run. So we go through an entire four-month process called the stipulations process, where we sit in a room with the DEC, the DOH. Haley was actually part of all of that. And we discuss how far regionally we're going to do the modeling, what the mileage for visibility, for sound, et cetera, will be on each and every one of our studies. And all of us come to an agreement on that before we undergo any of the actual work. So that wasn't unilaterally decided by Dan Scammer, what those modeling assumptions would be. Everyone in the room had a say in what they would be, and the PSC had final sign-off.
Okay. Thank you.
Anyone else?
I have a question.
Yes.
The Dan Scammer project compared to the glide path project that was proposed in the town of Ulster, there was also public discourse, and they did convince GlidePath to put in strictly batteries. Is your facility able to run just on solar with while they're charging batteries? Or, I mean, have you looked at that model, or is this something that, you know, as you just mentioned, DEC went over it, so this is what DEC is requiring, or recommending that you do, or is it the public utilities? I mean, could you just go a little more in depth to the reason that it can't be totally solar?
Sure. So I actually had a picture in my PowerPoint slide that I'm happy to send you, how much space it would take to do just 200 megawatts of solar. We only have 180 acres, and you'd need a heck of a lot more than that. I think you'd need like half of the town of Cayuga. It's pretty significant. So solar is not really an option to provide the same amount of power that we supply to the Lower Hudson Valley now. The difference in the GlidePath project and ours is that we're an existing facility that cannot be decommissioned. So we either need to continue to run as our old facility, replace it with something comparable in terms of the megawatts we provide, which is about 530 megawatts that we provide now. And if we choose to shut down or ask to shut down, we would have to go through a decommissioning process where we would apply to the PSC, ask. They would have to do reliability studies to see specifically if removing Dan Scammer from the Lower Hudson Valley zone would be a problem for reliability. So that's the long way of saying that the existing facility cannot just be turned off, and we can't just put batteries there, because batteries don't generate any power. They just store power that's generated somewhere else. So you still need a power generator. We would love to put battery storage in the old facility so that we can serve a renewable purpose as well as having a power generator there. But for the time being, whether old or new Dan Scammer, we have to have a power generation facility on that site that is available to the zone if they need it.
Anyone else? Okay. Yes, please. Legislative protest.
This is another question for Michelle. Will Dan Scammer Energy be conducting any studies on the existing gas lines to make sure that there are no leaks?
So that's Iroquois Pipeline. Iroquois Pipeline has to undergo its own federal and state biannual service requirements for leakage. So it's its own private entity since the energy system deregulated years ago. But there's a rigorous system in place. They have to take a certain section of pipe every year and do what they call as pigging, go in and x-ray the pipe, make sure there are no leaks. They have to do infrared flyovers, et cetera. So each private entity has to undergo that, and it's federally and state regulated. So while DanceGammer wouldn't have to do it for another private company, that private company is required to do those things.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we might be ready to transition deciding how we want to move forward, unless there are other questions or comments. So there have been two proposals that I heard. Well, there are three. We can hold it in committee, or we can vote it out of committee so that there's an opportunity for public comment, knowing that the co-sponsors are going to recommend that it go back to committee after there's been more robust public comment, which, you know, would put that off. And we've also heard legislator Heppner say that there's a move not to work on memorializing resolutions when we're doing virtual meetings. Legislator Bruno, please.
To kind of piggyback what Pete had said earlier, doing it over again is a real, very real possibility, especially being that we already know that we're going to be postponing it either here or in session. That being said, rather than make it have to go through it twice, I'm going to make a motion that we postpone this resolution until we have a better understanding of the crisis that we're in and whether we go back to floor meetings.
I second.
Yes, Legislator Bartels. Sorry. So just to be clear, you want to postpone it in committee and keep it in committee rather than
committee
send it
right
to
down,
floor
yes.
Postpone it on the floor.
And if I can, at the same time, by postponing it, I think it will also give all the players a chance to, since we're doing a whole new format of meeting and everybody has their opinions and their positions and where to stand, it gives us time to get them in writing more so. Possibly might be a way to do it. So like me as a single legislator, I could sit there and I could look at all the individual letters and I can concentrate on them more and actually make them more of an informed.
I'm losing you, Al. I don't know if anybody else is losing you. I can't hear you.
Oh, okay. I guess if anybody who has any comments, it'll give us that extra time where they can put them in writing and get them to us, to each legislature, so we can make more of an informed decision as opposed to just listening to it on a screen, which does have a certain distractions in its inherency. So that's another reason why I think that we should be able to postpone it. And people like Michelle and Sandy Hudson, you know, Haley, and I see other faces there as well, can get their opinions to us in writing. It would help a lot. And by postponing it, I think it will give us that extra time to do that.
I agree with that, Legislator Bruno.
Legislator Ward, did you want to add anything?
No, I'll second that.
Okay, so I hear a motion to postpone a decision to hold this in committee, and I'd like to call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anyone opposed? I'm sorry. I really should check. It sounds to me like the co-sponsors are okay with that.
It'll be with our consent, but it's postponed till next month.
Okay.
I just wanted to be clear that it's postponed for 1 month.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I need to amend the motion to say that, then I will. It's fine. A motion to.
Okay.
No, you don't have to.
Okay.
All right, so the motion is carried, and I'd like to invite Haley to just let the committee know, and we'll let the full legislature know. You have an event coming up that addresses the health issues. Would you like to just share that with the committee, and we'll move on?
Sure,
absolutely, and I can send the info to the clerk if people are interested. On Wednesday evening, we are hosting a webinar talking about public health impacts of dancing, more specifically in gas plants generally. We'll have Dr. David Carpenter speaking, who is the director of the SUNY Institute for Public Health and the Environment. So we're really excited about that. It's at 5:30 on Wednesday. And again, I can send information to those members of the legislature who are interested.
And I'd also like to just remind everyone, because we've talked about this in the committee, that there is a very active regional renewable energy implementation planning process where we hope to have a roadmap to meet the goals of CLCPA. And indeed, those goals are ambitious and will take a lot of land space. And Scenic Hudson has been working on a municipal toolkit that will help municipalities figure out the best, most appropriate places for solar, which will be the main renewable energy, main form of renewable energy generation here in the Hudson Valley, in a way that will protect our prime farmland, protect our farmers, in some cases to enhance their revenue, while protecting their ability to ensure food security, and also to protect forests and other lands that are ecologically important and part of the climate cycle. So, you know, here in the Hudson Valley, we are actively addressing these questions. We're not waiting for the state. And I wanted to just give two other tips. They are now calling CLCPA, or the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, just the Climate Act. And I thought that's a good habit to get into because it's going to come up a lot. It is the law of the land in New York State. And they're also, for the Accelerated Siting Act that Haley mentioned, just to call it the Accelerated Siting Act. It has a much longer title. And then people will know what we're talking about and we won't have to use so many acronyms. So I think we're complete on this topic for tonight. And we'll just continue to gather information and hear from the public. When the time is appropriate, we'll move it out of committee, but for now we'll leave it where it is. And I think, maybe before we take the next resolution, Tim Rose has been very patiently waiting. He may be hiding behind one of my, if Tim is here, maybe we could do a real quick update on UCRRA, and also ask Evelyn Wright if she has any comments she would like to make, and then we'll take the food waste composting revision or new law, but it's an update of the previous law. So Tim, do you want to give us a quick update? I know there was a meeting recently of the UCR board, and where do things stand, please?
Yep, real quick. The compliance officer position, the board would like to wait until the COVID-19 pandemic is over, but at least when things start to open up before we hire for that position. So that's where we are with that. We did receive the approvable letter from DEC last week, and however, it has to be revised. That's why I was just about, honestly, to send it to the committee, the environmental committee, when I noticed that the some of the wording was not correct in the letter. So I've asked DEC to revise it. They said they will. They agreed. And as soon as I get that approvable letter, Cornerstone will be printing up copies of the hard copies of the plan for the board and for the agency, and then they'll probably email the environmental committee. If not, I'll email a copy of the plan as well. Just to get a little more detail as regard to the letter, the approvable letter, they actually had in the letter that the county was responsible for implementation as well as conducting a self-analysis and reporting back to DEC. They had the county confused with the Ulster County Resource Recovery, which happens quite a bit. So when I pointed that out, they agreed. They said yes, the Resource Recovery is a separate entity, and they're the ones that are responsible for implementing it. So they're making those changes. And as soon as I get the letter, I'll forward it on to you.
Thank you. I know that, you know, several of our committees have weighed in and will be looking for forward to seeing how that gets processed by the agency. Legislator Criswell.
Yeah, I just had a quick question for you, Tim. Have you taken your programs, your community programs, online now? You know, all the composting programs and all those great programs that you guys do?
I know our recycling coordinator, as well as our recycling educator, is doing some online work with some of those community outreaches. And they are posting them on our website.
Can you share that with us? It'd be great for us to be able to promote that work. You know, people are just starting to get outside and they're itchy to get their compost going and do other things. So we'd love to be able to provide them with some guidance.
Sure. I hesitated saying it was on our website because after I started saying that, I know they did some online work with some of the community outreach, but it was some of the programs we had already scheduled to do in-house. And then they reached out to the individuals that were signed up to do some online work. However, I don't know if that was on our website, so I'd have to back off of that statement.
Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. Tim, following on Legislator Criswell's question, what's the status of the household hazardous waste program and collection, the electronics collection that you do?
April's was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we couldn't hold it because there's no way you can have social distancing. There's too many people around, you know, trying to get materials out of trunks and, you know, out of vehicles and so forth. So it just was not. And plus, there was a stay-at-home order. You know, you can't have people coming out to these events. So, the April one was canceled. That was supposed to be last April 25th. That was to be held, which was, I guess, last Saturday. Not this Saturday, but this Saturday. Right now, we're still on for the July event. As far as we know, however, I did see an email come from DEC today because that event is held at the DEC headquarters in New Paltz every year. And the DEC individual that we're in communication with, one of the chief engineers down there, he said, well, we'll keep it scheduled, but, you know, we're going to have to play it by ear, whether or not they'll be able to host it for us.
I just want to... say publicly that I hope that you can figure out a way to do it and keep the physical distancing, you know, maybe where people could drop it and I don't know, you could strategize it because, I mean, I think you've probably seen it. I know that there is a massive clean out underway. You know, people are really taking this time to clean out their garages and clean out their homes and purge and, you know, like I've never seen before, I know I'm doing it. And so I think that it's an opportunity that would be lost because people are probably finding the craziest of things that I'd hate for them in the absence of an event like that to just put them in the waste stream, the regular waste stream. So I know it's a challenge, but I hope that you'll start to think about ways to strategize that you could do it safely.
If we did it, you'd have to greatly limit the amount of vehicles you'd bring in because you'll literally have 25 people that are right next to each other when they're unloading these vehicles. And that's how fast these vehicles, we'll do 400 vehicles in 6 hours. So as soon as these vehicles are coming in, you've got 3 or 4 people on top of each other trying to get materials out of trunks. Sometimes it takes 2 people to lift some of these heavy containers to get them out of minivans and so forth. So I mean, we could probably do it, but you're going to, I mean, just thinking off the top of my head, you have to greatly reduce the amount of vehicles because it's going to take you a long time to keep everybody away from each other. So one vehicle can be unloaded, let's say, by one person instead of having 3 or 4.
Right. I don't expect you to have an answer now, but I think if you could start strategizing different ways that you could look at it, it's definitely such an asset to the community. And in times like right now, I think it's probably needed more than ever. I think there's more, right. more people probably have boxes full of, you know, ancient cans of things that they found deep in their garages or attics. And so at least I hope they do rather than just putting it into their waste stream. So.
Well, it's definitely something we can look at. It sounds like from the email I got today, DEC may not allow us to be there. They basically said we're going to play it by ear right now to see where we are in July. So if they don't allow us to be there for whatever reasons, because I know most of them are all working from home out of those offices, then we'll have to find another venue, and that may be maybe coming back up to our facility.
Okay.
So.
All right. Well, thank you. Thanks for even thinking about it.
Sure.
And Tim, if it's at all possible, maybe there could be a PSA reminding people that if they're using this time where people are staying at home and doing spring cleaning, I would venture to say that probably all of us are in that boat right now. That they carefully set aside hazardous materials, you know, chemicals and other hazardous materials, and also electronics for when the next collections are. But I think this would be very timely for a PSA or mm-hmm. whatever outreach capability, Facebook, social media, et cetera, to get the word out, to remind people not to take that shortcut.
Right. Duly noted.
And then the last thing I want to say is that this pandemic has also caused us to slow down the excellent momentum we had toward creating a zero waste plan. But we will get back to it. People are adjusting to this alternate lifestyle that is forced upon us. And I know that Legislator Petit has provided a really good draft. An outline, and also, staff and board members from the agency and a few other volunteers are very interested in helping to create that zero waste management plan, which I think is going to be a critical, part of the whole effort moving forward. All right. So at this point, see if I can pull it back up. We're going to get back to resolutions. And Evelyn, this particular resolution involves your staff, so if there are other things that you want to add, and I'm just looking for where I pulled up the, could I hear a motion on the food waste management, if anyone has it in front of them? We want to move forward on the next resolution, and I'm sorry, it's hard for me to juggle three things at once. Oh, here it is. Resolution number 192, setting a public hearing on proposed local law number 6 of 2020, a local law amending various provisions of local law number 1 of 2020, a local law amending the code of the County of Ulster to include mandatory food scraps composting by large generators to be held on Tuesday, June 9th, 2020 at 6:10 p.m. And apparently, since it's in the resolution, there is a way to hold a public hearing. Basically, what this says is that we will, instead of implementing the food waste composting law number, local law number 5 that was passed last year, we will extend that date by 6 months to January 2021 and all subsequent dates. So that's for generators of 2 tons or more. And then the generators that generate 1 ton, 3/4 ton, and 1/2 ton would all be given an additional 6 months. So those dates were extended by 6 months. But when you change a law,
you need to create a new local law. And so the rest of the law is identical, but it's to give the Department of Energy and the county staff that have been redeployed to work on resilience and other really critical problems during the corona pandemic, time to catch their breath and be sure that the implementation goes smoothly. So I'd like to hear a motion and a second for purposes of discussion, and then we'll take it from there.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second it.
Okay. Thank you, Legislator Petit and Legislator Criswell.
Yes. I did have a question, man. I wasn't in favor of postponing this. I mean, we did pass the law last year, and I feel the businesses have had time, you know, even if a lot of the restaurants aren't actually open. But you're saying this is for the county staff because right now they're in the midst of a very successful and very busy Project Resilience. So I think with that, I could do another 6 months as long as it didn't go beyond that.
Legislator Crystal.
I just wanted to say that I really appreciate going back to this and adding clarity. In a time when enforcing this would be really unrealistic, I think it just makes so much sense to give it a little bit more time, give businesses more time to understand these are the new time frames and to get all our ducks in a row. We're living in cuckoo land right now, so we just don't know how it's going to play out. So I think giving it just this little bit of breather is prudent. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, it seems to me that there are quite a few in the first cohort, the first 26 businesses, they're already doing it, and many of them are doing it on site. I'm sure it's a very downscaled effort at SUNY New Paltz because the cafeterias are closed. You know, it just didn't make sense to try to proceed, but the main reason was that the staff that was retained has been redeployed as was necessary in this crisis. I would like to ask, unless there are other hands, I just want to ask Deputy Wright if she would address this and just get feedback from the executive branch on this.
Yeah, Manna and everyone, I appreciate the clarity that you're adding with this change. As Manna said, I think the Environment Department staff have been spending 95% of their time working on Project Resilience, and I'm just really in awe of what Amanda and her team have been able to create in such a short time. I think they are among the most capable people in the county staff as a whole, and it's just been really amazing to watch them work. But it has meant that they have not gotten even a starting point on implementing this. I think this all broke out about a week after Michelle arrived, maybe 2 weeks. So I think the dates that you've laid out are really clear and will be achievable. I appreciate it.
So it is setting a public hearing. Everything else is very much the same, but it's giving the staff breathing room, the businesses some breathing room, and, you know, a chance to adjust. And we don't even know if all those businesses will come back. We certainly hope that they do. But, you know, giving 6 months breathing room, I think, makes a lot of sense. So is there any other discussion before we call the question on setting a public hearing? I want to point out there's going to be a little overlap because setting the public hearing in June means that we vote in July, but the executive has power to authorize you know, a very short deferment. But we wanted to be sure that the law made sense in terms of the history that we're living through. Any comments from Attorney Gordon or staff? Or I think everything is covered. We, Legislator Bartels and I kind of went over it with a fine-tooth comb, and she straightened me out on a few things I was unclear on, even though I helped author and sponsor. All right, if that's, if we're hearing no other questions or concerns, I would like to call the vote on, I believe it's resolution number 152. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The motion carries to set a public hearing.
And it's 192. It's there.
And now let's see, is there any new business? And then in terms of old business, the Solid Waste Planning Commission has not met, but we certainly will want to convene a meeting as soon as there is a document to consider. That is one of the main purposes of that commission. Fawn, would you remind me, do we need to fill some seats? Or did, I think we did. But I know we did in the Climate Smart. I'm not sure about solid waste planning.
I'm not sure about solid waste planning either. And I know that people have left other, we lost someone on recycling oversight. We had some openings there. But I'm not, I'll have to look it up. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay, so let's maybe prepare that for next month if we do need to make some appointments to both recycling oversight and solid waste planning, because those documents are going to be in front of us fairly soon. And then the other is Climate Smart, and we actually did hold a Climate Smart, a virtual Climate Smart meeting. And one of the things that's still outstanding is, and this is just by way of reminder, but for Legislator Bartels and anybody else who is participating, there is still real interest in working with the Ulster County Fair. We don't know yet what things will be like by August, but if there is a virtual meeting that we could join and start that conversation, I know that there are folks on the Climate Smart Committee that would like to help the fair move to zero waste in ways that are practical and valuable in terms of the model that they set and the educational value. The other thing that I'd like to report is that there's a subcommittee of the Climate Smart Committee, a group of people that have formed to investigate community choice aggregation. Different, I'm going to ask that if people, yeah, I guess everybody is muted. Anyway, that, lost my train of thought, sorry. Community choice aggregation. And they have been, the people in Ulster County that are interested in this, I know New Paltz and Marbletown already are moving in that direction, or have moved in that direction, but Saugerties, Gardner, and several other communities are very interested in pursuing it. So there was a meeting with the folks who are working on this up in the Capital District, which is many municipalities working together. And also this month there was a meeting with the folks from Westchester who have formed an alliance of municipalities called Sustainable Westchester, and they actively have a CCA with Juul Energy. The one up in Albany is with MEGA, which is basically a state agency, and there is a third company. And they're doing some wonderful sharing of information and identifying problems with the existing CCA legislation, enabling legislation, that, you know, if folks from Westchester, Ulster County, and the Capital District have a meeting with the Public Service Commission and NYSERDA, it could be very productive in removing those obstacles. And I really want to commend that effort, because instead of just jumping into a decision, these municipalities are really weighing what's best for their municipality and learning from each other. So, you know, it's Susan Gillespie from Citizens for Local Power has kind of stepped up to spearhead that and is really doing a great job of documenting what they're learning so that if new municipalities start to consider community choice aggregation as a way of empowering the municipality to take control of their energy future, that information will be readily available. Any other old business? Hearing none. I would be delighted at 7:39 to entertain a motion to adjourn. So moved by Legislator Bruno and seconded by Legislator Petit. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion. Thank you. Motion carries. And thank you to the staff for being so helpful and to all of our guests.
Yay. Jane, thanks so much for the help before. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Stay healthy.
Good night, everyone. Take care, everybody.